Good morning. You're tuned in to Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, if you've not yet had enough presidential debates this election season, there's actually one happening this evening in Denver, but it's quite different from the one that we saw last week. In fact, it's the free and equal debate. 10 presidential candidates have been invited. 5 are already confirmed to participate. We'll hear from one of them, the Green Party candidate. Then we continue our look at education during COVID-19. We'll hear how Nextlight, the municipal operated internet service in Longmont, has expanded their services during COVID-19. And we'll hear about the difficulties that they're facing trying to provide internet service to the most vulnerable in the community. After that, you might need to bring a warm parka, but it looks like you'll be able to eat a meal outside on Boulder's West Pearl Street this fall and winter in order to avoid exposure to the coronavirus. We'll have more coming up. Then we'll have more food news with John Lendorf on Radio Nibbles. After headlines from the BBC at the bottom of the hour, we'll continue our coverage of the 2020 elections. And this morning we'll hear from one of the statewide ballot measures, Proposition 118. It would provide paid family leave to Coloradans. At 9 o'clock, we'll then bring you a forum with two candidates seeking election to the Boulder County Board of Commissioners. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. CU Boulder announced on Wednesday that it will resume in-person classes on Wednesday, October 14th. The announcement came on the same day that Boulder County Public Health announced 2 new public health orders that are targeted at college-aged people. One order that was announced is regarding gathering sizes for young adults aged 18 to 22, and the other order is around collegiate group homes. The first order outlines 4 levels for gatherings among 18 to 22-year-old people in the city of Boulder, ranging from no gatherings at all to gatherings of 6 individuals for a private event or attendance at regulated events. The rules do not apply to in-person learning in schools and colleges. The second public health order says that collegiate group homes, mainly fraternities and sororities, can be released now from the stay-at-home order after October 12th if they submit a plan for isolation, disinfection and infection prevention. That plan must then be approved by Boulder County Public Health. Colorado State University in Fort Collins is now dealing with its own campus-wide outbreak of the coronavirus, with 375 cases confirmed. The Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment said last week that 33 cases at CSU were linked to fraternities and sororities. Statewide, there are 23 outbreaks of the coronavirus that are connected to colleges. And these include Colorado College in Colorado Springs and Regis University in Denver. The city of Longmont is considering creating a short-term RV living option at the Boulder County Fairgrounds for people who are struggling to find housing. City Council began discussing the proposal at Tuesday night's meeting. The Longmont Leader reports that the proposal would give RV users 3 to 6 months to find a more permanent housing solution in advance of passage of the proposed ordinance that would also see RVs and other sleeper vehicles being banned from parking long-term on the streets of Longmont. If Boulder County agrees to allow a portion of the fairgrounds to be used as a safe lot, people availing of the site must agree to work with Homeless Solutions for Boulder County to find more permanent housing. And in the weather today, expect smoky skies once again and warm temperatures, highs in the mid to upper 80s. Tomorrow also warm, but the air may clear somewhat. Highs tomorrow in the mid 80s. Similar temperatures and conditions on Saturday, but it looks like it could cool off for early next week. Right now, the forecast for Monday is to have a high in the mid 60s. It is 8 minutes past 8 o'clock. You're listening to KGNU. Mm-hmm. long before the chaos of the current presidential debate season, people have been critical of the entire debate process. And this goes particularly for third party candidates who have been excluded from debating in major forums. Well, this year is no different. However, the Free and Equal movement is back to give a platform for third parties. The Free and Equal Elections Foundation is a non-profit whose mission is to open the electoral process through education and collaborative action. And they're hosting a United We Stand tour, which is an annual nationwide tour that invites the younger generation to participate in the electoral process with musicians, artists and thought leaders. They're also hosting debates inviting all presidential candidates and in particular third party candidates as well. Well, one of the Free and Equal debates is happening in Denver this evening. And one of the participants is the Green Party candidate, and that's Howard Hawkins. And Howard has a long history as a trade unionist and environmental activist. In fact, he is the co-founder of the Green Party of the United States. And he says the entire presidential debate system is dysfunctional.
Well, the debates between Biden and Trump are a fraud. The Commission on Presidential Debates sounds like a government agency like the Federal Election Commission. In fact, it's a private corporation that's controlled by the Democrats and Republicans to keep their competition out. We're on enough ballots to win the Electoral College. The Libertarians are on enough ballots to win the Electoral College. That ought to be the criterion to get into the debate. And we have real solutions. I mean, that debate, Trump was insulting Biden, and Biden was telling everybody what's wrong with Trump, not what he's going to do. We have positive solutions to life or death issues, like the climate crisis. We're the ones for the Green New Deal. If anybody hadn't been paying attention, Joe Biden made it clear that it's not his plan. We have an economic bill of rights to deal with this growing economic inequality that has led to declining life expectancies among working class people. So we need a job guarantee, a guaranteed income above poverty, Medicare for all, enough public housing so everybody has an affordable housing option, lifelong public education, and a secure retirement by increasing Social Security benefits so no seniors living in poverty. Third life or death issue that none of these people are talking about is this new nuclear arms race. The bullets in the atomic scientists has the doomsday clock they've had since the 40s, the closest it's ever been to midnight. You'd think that would be a top campaign issue. It's not being discussed. So we have peace initiatives to try to reduce tensions and get the nuclear powers to start negotiating how we can get rid of these weapons, which if they're ever used is going to kill us all. They should never be used. So if we were in a debate, I think we'd bring constructive ideas that need to be discussed and ideas that the majority of people in this country support, like a Green New Deal and Medicare for all. There's, you know, major parties don't support that. The majority of people do. We're the party that supports that. And we're excluded. It's just not right.
Well, in terms of pushing those ideas into national conversation, I mean, do you see that as the role of third party candidates? Because I've heard this before from other third party candidates that, you know, realistically speaking, they don't expect to necessarily win a particular, you know, office. However, they say that the conversations and the talking points in their platforms need to be included in the national debate. And that needs to really be considered as a significant aspect when we're talking about third party candidates and why they should be included in debates and get more coverage than they typically do.
Well, that's been the historic role of third parties in the United States. Going back to the Liberty Party, with the question of the abolition of slavery on the table when the Whigs and the Democrats wouldn't talk about it. The populist movement put antitrust, anti-monopoly, banking reform, money reform, civil rights for Black people, kept that on the agenda during the post-Civil War period. Socialist Party, public employment of the unemployed, social insurance programs like Social Security, eventually adopted during the New Deal. So that's what we've done. Of course, we have the example of the Republicans who build up from the bottom to the point where they replace the Whigs as the second major party. That's what we really want to do, because we got two parties to represent the corporate rich and those special interests. We need a party that represents working people. And so that's our aspiration to become a major force and a major party in American politics.
You've mentioned some of your specific policy ideas, particularly when it comes to peace initiatives, you know, raising awareness about what's happening, certainly right now with the investment in nuclear weapons and, of course, the climate crisis. What about some of the other major issues that we're seeing being debated amongst the two major parties? Healthcare, tax reform. What about healthcare? What's the Green Party position on healthcare for the U.S.?
Well, we support Medicare for all as a community-controlled national health service. So we don't want to just socialize payment with a single public payer. That's what we do the first year and give everybody coverage for all medically necessary services, Medicare for all. But over the next decade, we'd like to expand that into a community-controlled national health service where the hospitals and clinics are publicly owned instead of being income-maximizing institutions. The doctors and nurses and other healthcare workers are public employees rather than fee-for-service people who may get salaries from hospital organizations or are expected to maximize fees for service, which means running through patients fast or giving them treatments they maybe really don't need. And that creates a problem for cost control as well as quality of service. And then we put the whole system under the governance of locally elected health boards that would federate at the state and national level for overall planning and coordination. So we think that's superior to the Medicare for All plans that we've heard from the Democrats, you know, Bernie Sanders and Congresswoman Jay Paul. So that's what we want to do with healthcare and cover all medically necessary services through a publicly funded system and no co-pays, no deductibles, no out-of-pocket expenses.
Howie, you've been involved in the Green Party since its inception here in the U.S. You're the co-founder of the United States Green Party. How is the Green Party doing nationwide? Because I think a lot of people just hear about it maybe every 4 years when it comes to presidential elections. If, you know, the candidates are on the ballot maybe in somebody's state. But when we're seeing Green Party politics in other countries, we're seeing real inroads. I mean, the Green Party is part of a coalition parliamentary government now in Ireland. We've seen them, you know, have significant political power in European countries. Why do you think it hasn't had as much traction here in the US? Or maybe I'm wrong in that. I mean, are we seeing inroads with Green Party candidates winning races statewide, local races, municipal races around the country?
Yeah, we've won over our history 1,220 races that we know about, most of them local. There are over 100 elected officials in office now around the country. We have over 200 candidates in this election. So the idea that we just show up to run for president every 4 years is false. It's not true. It's something that's thrown at us. And a lot of people know that's not true because in their areas, the Greens are active in local and state races. In areas where we're not, it might look that way. So, you know, just the scale of what we've done, it's in terms of the number of Greens elected, we've elected more as a third party than any third party since the heyday of the Socialist Party back in the 1900s through the 1930s. And then there's a long gap until the Green Party appeared, a couple generations. On the other hand, we should be electing thousands of people to local office. And that's one of the things I've been saying in my campaign is we've got, and it's not just the Greens, it's the whole left. I mean, as an independent left, an alternative to these corporate parties, the progressives got to stop disarming and silencing themselves by relying on the Democrats to fight the far-right Republicans. Because what the Democrats do is accommodate them. Bill Clinton called it triangulation. It was Barack Obama and Joe Biden trying to get bipartisan cooperation during the 2 years when they had both houses, when everything from the stimulus to the Affordable Care Act to extending the Bush tax cuts, which, you know, that was unimaginable for Democrats, you know, back during the early Bush years. But by the time we got to the next Democratic administration, they accommodated the right. And that's why, you know, our appeal is to not just those who are Greens now, but those who consider themselves progressives, If we don't act and speak for ourselves and try to get done what we believe through the Democratic Party, it's not going to happen. Like we found out in these debates, Biden and Harris are adamantly opposed to the Green New Deal. They want to frack. They want to frack for oil and gas and continue burning fossil fuels when we face a climate emergency. And they're not for Medicare for all. They want this very expensive, more expensive plan of Medicare for those who pay for it, opt in, the public option, as well as all these hundreds of private insurance companies where nearly a third of our healthcare dollar is spent figuring out how much, whether a treatment is covered and whether the insurance company will pay what the provider bills, and then they haggle over that. You know, it's a big waste of resources that could go into healthcare if we just had a efficient single public payer system. So the left has got to act and speak for itself instead of getting lost in the sauce of the Democratic Party, where they're junior partners to the corporate interests that dominate that party. You know, they let the progressives give speeches to make them look better than they are to progressives, but when it comes to making decisions, it's the corporate wing.
What would you say to listeners who maybe have voted Green in the past, but as you know, we've said, this is a pretty extraordinary year, and many people are saying this is just not the year to veer off and support a third party candidate when there's so much at stake?
Well, I would say, look at the polls. Biden's going to win in a landslide nationally. I mean, real clear politics right now with current polling, 353 to 185 in the Electoral College. That's been steady since the spring. This is a much bigger lead than Obama ever had, than Clinton had, and it just bumped up after that disastrous debate for Trump last week. So question is, if you're a progressive of any kind, how are you going to vote against Trump? You can actually vote for a progressive agenda, the Green Party, or are you going to vote for Biden, who's against Medicare for all and a Green New Deal and so forth? So don't waste your vote voting for what you don't want. Make the politicians hear your voice and what you want, and then we'll take it from there after the election.
If people are listening now and they're in a community where there maybe isn't an active Green Party, I mean, how do you start that grassroots movement where people who are disenfranchised and disillusioned with the two-party system and want some type of change and maybe want to start that at a very local level with elections? You know, what's your advice to folks, and what do you hear from people around the country?
Well, they should contact my campaign, and after the voting, we plan to continue and provide training for people on how to organize local Green branches and how to engage in local politics. One of the difficulties for the left is we've had this culture of episodic mobilizations, demonstrations. I come out of the new left of the 60s, and I think we threw the baby out with the bathwater in rejecting some of the old left approaches. We were right to reject their, they were slow to pick up feminism and multi-class issues like peace and the environment and racial justice. They, you know, tend to focus on economics and class. On the other hand, they knew how to build mass organizations that engaged people at the local level in developing their, you know, thinking for themselves and acting for themselves. The new left, I think we were overimpressed with what we did with civil rights and anti-Vietnam War. We mobilized, we got good results. So we haven't built organizations since then. And that's the kind of organizing we got to get back to. And then you got a foundation, you got a local base of people who have experience in politics. And once you've, you know, won local races, then when you run your people for state legislature or Congress, local people say, hey, you know, they're in the local government, they've been elected. It's, you get over that psychological hump that, oh, they're third party, they can't win.
That's Howie Hawkins, who is the Green Party presidential candidate. Find out more about his campaign at howiehawkins.us. And he's one of the candidates who will be participating in the Free and Equal Elections Open Presidential Debate live from Denver. It's happening this evening at 6 p.m. and you can watch it and find out more at freeandequal.org, freeandequal.org. Well, with so many students doing a large amount of their education now online, access to the internet is crucial.
but not all families have that access. Next Light, the city of Longmont's internet utility provider, has expanded their service during the COVID-19 pandemic. And KGNU's Rosanna Longo spoke with Lyra Nitkley from Next Light about how internet is a utility that is so needed today, particularly when it comes to access to public education.
The internet is a utility. It is a need that people have today more than ever. I think we all found that once COVID-19 hit and we realized that children were moving to this online-based education, there were a lot of families that were caught off guard, a lot of families that had survived with maybe a cell phone that was connected to the internet, or going to a coffee shop or the library. At this point in time, it was impossible for families that were living in the situation to successfully lead their lives during a pandemic. So one of the benefits of a utility like NextLight and having a municipally owned internet provider is that we can pivot quickly. We can make decisions from one day to the next, and we can provide resources to the most underprivileged or families that need it the most, and those that are lost in that digital divide that don't have any internet connectivity. And what we did was we started a program last July, so July of last year, called Sharing the Next Light, that provided a free internet connection for families with children in the St. Vrain Valley School District. This program was dreamt up long before COVID was even a twinkle in our eye, and it was important for us as a community-owned service to be living that truth and providing that service to all of the families, not just the ones that can afford it. And because studies show that children that don't have access to the internet suffer academically, especially when they are in the higher levels of elementary school, when they are given a Chromebook or when they're giving a tablet of some sort and are expected to access the internet for homework and for communication with teachers and so on and so forth.
Next Light has been intentional in reaching out to schools and organizations to help them share the news that internet is available for them. But as Lyra neatly says, sometimes it is the most difficult part of the job to let families know that they can access this free and essential resource.
We were able to expand this program to children of all ages that were in this school district, the St. Vrain Valley School District. And we have been very adamant and intentional in reaching out to school administrators and other local organizations that can help us share the news and share that this resource is available for these families, which sometimes is the most difficult part of it, is letting people know that there is a resource for them that they can take advantage of and that will be free for them and available for their children.
Since the pandemic, the program has expanded to include caretakers, essential workers, grant recipient college students, and now Head Start children too.
Since the pandemic began, we have expanded the program to include caretakers. So if you are someone that is still going to work, an essential worker, and you're leaving your children with your parents or a neighbor, these people can also qualify to get the free service. And we have recently made the decision to expand the group that we can take into the program to Pell Grant recipients, so kids that are in college, as well as a small group of pre-K and Head Start kiddos as well. So we are always meeting, we're always talking, we're always trying to find the ways that we can best serve the community. And at the end of the day, that's our goal. We are a not-for-profit that is here to provide a resource for the community that we live in, and at the end of the day, make it better.
That was Lyra Nitkley, Marketing Communications and Product Manager at Next Light, which is City of Longmont Internet Utility. For KGNU, I am Rosanna Longo.
And throughout the month of October, on Thursday mornings, we're taking a look at education in the COVID-19 era as part of our Trends series. And tune in on October 29th for an in-depth look at this, followed by a panel discussion. Well, restaurants on Boulder's West Pearl, Unihill and other areas offering outdoor tables this summer due to the coronavirus pandemic will not be required to vacate at the end of October as had been originally scheduled. KGNU's Ros Brown says Boulder City Council has agreed to follow Denver's lead in keeping the outdoor dining program going into 2021.
Social distancing requirements due to COVID-19 has limited outdoor dining at restaurants. To help them stay afloat, Boulder closed two blocks on West Pearl and a street on University Hill to allow tables for eating outside. Given Colorado's weather and the unknowns of COVID-19, it was only supposed to continue through the end of October. But the virus has not abated, meaning restaurant capacity is still limited. Speakers at Tuesday's Boulder City Council meeting urged a continuation of the new policy.
My name is Jessica Benjamin and I live in South Boulder. I am the owner and producer of First Bite, the Boulder County Restaurant Week. I have been working intimately with over 30 of our restaurants since May and have witnessed their creativity and resourcefulness in action. The current restrictions of 50% capacity are not changing anytime soon, and the summer boost of revenue is over. There is not a one-size-fits-all solution for winter outdoor dining. We need to allow restaurants to operate with whatever resources are available. What outdoor dining does guarantee for all businesses is to create jobs. Diners want to be able to dine out safely and comfortably, and the restaurants are working feverishly to make this happen.
Boulder is following Denver's lead in continuing the outdoor dining program through the winter months. A survey conducted this summer found that 40% of Boulder residents would like to see those outdoor restaurant expansions on Pearl Street made permanent, while 33% think the street closures should remain some of the time, and 17% don't support making the closures permanent. For KGNU, I'm Roz Brown.
It is 8:30. You're listening to KGNU. Coming up in 5 minutes' time, we're going to hear more of our election coverage with Proposition 118, a debate on the measure that asks Coloradans to vote on paid family leave. Then at 9 o'clock, it is another Boulder County Commissioner candidate debate. Up next, though, more food news with Radio Nibbles.
Have a banana, Hannah. Try the salami, Tommy.
And it is time for Radio Nibbles with John Lendorf, joining us from his micro farm in Lewisville. And I know it is October, John. The tomatoes are still coming in, but the basil is gone. What are you finding yourself harvesting in your garden now that fall is upon us?
A few tomatoes are still coming in. I got some cayenne peppers and a few herbs, but it's clear that it's fall, and the garden party is over, and so I find myself looking back a little bit and getting a little nostalgic for what was and what we took for granted, I guess.
Well, I guess we all took for granted being able to go out to cafes and restaurants and just eat. And that's not the case now. It's a lot more complicated. And I know that you've discovered some gems from your past, and you found a restaurant review that you wrote, gosh, almost two decades ago, a real flashback from your time at the Rocky Mountain News.
Yeah, it was a review I wrote of Mizuno Restaurant, which was a highlight of my restaurant reviewing days. And I just started reading it, and it seemed like a crazy dream, you know, compared to the way things are now. Well, for one thing, there were newspapers, and people read them every day, and I got paid to eat and write about it. But the other thing was just the sense from the review, and we can post it online, but that, you know, I went out to eat with usually two or three other people, and it was crowded and loud, and we would all order different things and then pass the plate to the right or the left so everybody could taste everything, and people would come by and, you know, over your shoulder and talk to you, laughing and tasting. And I can't imagine doing that now. And it makes me a little sad that I miss watching other people eat, I guess.
Well, we're all going to get together next Thursday because it is time for a supersized edition, yet socially distanced, Bumper Radio Nibbles, because it's KG News full membership drive. And so it's going to be happening next Thursday morning, 8:30 to 9:30 a.m. We'll have some special interviews with, you know, local farmers, local restaurateurs. We'll hear about the cookbook that we've talked about, First Bite, that you're part of, John. And this is just a time, I think, for us to get together, albeit from a distance. But I always liken these shows to everybody pulling up a chair at the kitchen table, and we'll all sit down and have a good old natter about food.
Yes, and for the first time, and well, probably since February, I'll actually be in a studio at KGNU, and we can make eye contact, kind of like Mike Pence and Kamala Harris through the plexiglass. And I'm really looking forward. I'm really looking forward to it, and I hope everybody tunes in and joins us for this communal moment.
And it really will be a communal moment. And it's the first show of this kind that we'll have done since the pandemic. And so we will be there together, albeit through a glass, but at least, you know, in the same building. But we're going to have lots and lots of great thank you gifts for new and renewing members. Restaurant gift certificates, gift cards. Oh, we've got some great fun stuff related to your monthly chocolate tasting club.
Yes, a membership for 1 month, and the November tasting is going to be quite remarkable, and we'll also have a box of sweets from the inventing room that glow under a black light. They're very cool.
Very cool. And we'll have copies of that new First Bite Boulder cookbook as well. So lots of great reasons for you to tune in next Thursday morning. But in the meantime, John, what's the best thing you've tasted lately?
It was dinner last night that I made with my son and his significant other. And the best part of it, I had one single ripe tomato from my garden that was perfect, and I dressed it in herbs and olive oil and vinegar, and we made some chicken thighs and a homemade plum sauce, and had some wheat berries sautéed with garlic, and it was a great meal.
Sounds delicious. Well, don't forget, you can catch Food Waste Tips from John Lendorf on Friday mornings. Catch the entire Food Waste series at news.kgnu.org. And please do join us for that special show next Thursday morning. Bon appetit.
Keep on cooking.
Everybody eats when they come to mind.